During this year in the cycle of readings, we have these long gospel readings. So you see the gospel reading noted in your bulletin, John 11, 1 to 45. I want you to read that tonight. Read that this week during your devotions. But I'm counting on you this morning to stay awake, one, and to participate in this sermon. So if a slide comes up, then it's your line, like this one. Okay, like you mean it. And some of them are a little rhythmic, so that you did all right. Now, going forward, there's going to be a clue for you. Every time you hear me say, "You tell me," then it'll be your turn. So you tell me. I got to tell you, the folks at the early service did a really good job. The bar is set pretty high here. Now, what I want you to do with me as we begin is I want you to think back over the last several weeks. I want you to think on this spiritual journey that we've been taking together. This past month, this Lenten journey to Jerusalem, to a cross, to Holy Week. We met Nicodemus. Nicodemus, the respected, wealthy, and revered leader of the Jewish people. We met a woman of grief, despair, and loneliness. An outcast, a Samaritan woman who had lost five husbands. And last week, we met a man who was born blind. Then he met Jesus, and his sight was restored. This week, though, our desperation is going to be at a whole different level. For this week, we encounter death. The death of Lazarus and the grief of an entire community, a grief most intimately experienced by the dead man's sisters, Martha and Mary. Each of our gospel characters on this journey have had unique stories, but then we know that every human journey is unique and eerily similar at the same time. Nicodemus came at night. He was not afraid of Jesus, but he was afraid of being seen with Jesus. He feared that his reputation could take a hit, and that his place in the community could be compromised if he was seen taking interest in this country rabbi named Jesus. He was bound, we might say. He was bound by tradition, and he was bound by the expectation of others. The Samaritan woman. She came to draw water at the well outside of the city, a well that was only frequented by those who were passing by. There were wells closer to her home, but she was not welcome there. She was not welcome at the watering holes where the good women of Samaria filled their jars and traded their life stories and thus lightened the heavy loads of daily living. No, every day this scorned woman would make the trek to the well alone. Alone. No one to walk with, no one to talk with, no one who really cared for her. This daily journey was a metaphor for her life experience. What did the people think of her? Well, you tell me. She was bound, you see. She was bound by shame. She was bound by the wagging tongues of those who did not care about her in the least. The woman at the well was bound. The man born blind. He had no name. He was defined by his disability. Now, of course, all humans are born able and disabled. I'm able to see, but mostly disabled when it comes to singing. I'm able to write, but trust me, you would not want me to do algebra for you. We are all disabled, and we are all able. None of us are perfect. But this man, a man who was born blind, was bound by the attitudes of those around him. They saw his disability as a judgment from God. He was clearly a sinner. He was reaping what he had sowed. What did the people think of him? Well, you tell me.
Your blindness is God's judgment. That much is very clear. It proves you are a sinner. You're not welcome here.
Now, it goes without saying that the good religious people did not see their own lack of coordination or obesity or baldness as a punishment from God. But they did judge the blind man, and they judged the blind man's parents. Now, blindness brings a series of challenges, no question about it, but none of the challenges are more daunting than overcoming the binding of a community which seeks to judge and exclude. The blind man was bound, which brings us to Lent 5 and our gospel lesson for today. We meet Lazarus. Now, Lazarus and Jesus, they were friends. They would go on walks together. They would skip stones on the water. They would tell silly stories to one another. They'd meet for happy hour. They'd fill out their NCAA brackets together. You see, Lazarus and Jesus were friends. Lazarus and his sisters, Martha and Mary, were like family to Jesus. Now, they lived in the village of Bethany. That's just a few miles outside of Jerusalem. Here, Jesus would stop to rest. He'd stop to have dinner, to spend a quiet evening. You see, Jesus and Lazarus were friends. Our story this morning from the Gospel of John, Jesus and Lazarus are both around 30 years old. Now, Lazarus took ill. Some nasty bug or disease had him reading the obituaries every morning to make sure he wasn't in there. Jesus was many miles away when the news came to him that his dear friend was in peril. Some messengers arrived. They had been sent by Martha and Mary. They said, "This is urgent, Jesus. This is urgent. You need to come as soon as possible. It could be a matter of life or death." But Jesus did not hurry. He continued his work. His work was important. He was teaching. He was healing. He was touching. He was loving. It was 2 days before he got a break in his schedule. 2 days before he could begin his journey to Bethany, to Lazarus, to Martha, and Mary. By the time Jesus departed, Lazarus was already dead. When he died, the villagers of Bethany wrapped him up in burial clothes and sheets. The funeral procession was long and sad, with a large measure of grief. What did they sound like? Well, you tell me.
Lazarus dead. Lazarus dead. Our dear friend.
This was death, but it was not just death. It was death out of season. You see, 30-year-olds are not supposed to die, and he was dead all right, dead as a doornail. They laid Lazarus in a tomb. It was a cave, actually. He was dead, and it was hot. It was Middle East hot. The beating sun brought sweat to the mourners' brows. Inside the cave, the body cooked. Decay began. The stench of death was in the air. 4 days later, Jesus finally arrived. Martha and Mary, wearing the faces of grief, took out their anger and helplessness on Jesus. They said, "Lord, if you had been here, our brother would not have died. Why didn't you come when we sent for you? Our lives are now filled with sadness and brokenness and pain. It's almost like a part of us has died and is sealed up inside that tomb with our brother. Lord, if you had been here, if you had just come when we called you, we wouldn't be in this mess right now. Our brother, your friend, would still be alive. Would you be mad? You tell me."
"It is your fault, Jesus. You should have come. Our brother Lazarus, he was so young. And now he's gone, and the pain is clear.
Jesus now asked to be taken to the tomb. They walked to the graveyard. The people were crying. Jesus' friend was dead. The grief was more than they could bear, and for Jesus, it was more than he could bear, too. Remember now, Jesus was God, but he was also fully human. It's a mystery. He was fully God, and yet he was just like us. What's your image of God? Is your God far off and distant and stoic and unfeeling? Is your God uncaring and detached? Do you think that God simply fired up the Big Bang and he's been sitting on the sideline ever since, emotionless, taking notes on this human experience? Well, think again. You're about to see the very heart of God. Jesus comes to the tomb of his dear friend. He experiences death out of season. And here we see the face of grief. The only Son of God drops his head into his hands and begins to weep. He wept. He cried. Jesus was greatly disturbed. You know the truth, don't you? We humans don't like death. Jesus, the human one, wiped his eyes, caught his breath. We humans don't like death, and Jesus was human. Jesus never met a dead body in the New Testament that he didn't raise. There was a resurrection in the air. Jesus called out saying, "Take away the stone." He now had the attention of the mourners. They scratched their head. They said, "Well, perhaps, Jesus, we should just settle down." "Jesus, this is really not a good idea. I mean, removing this stone is not a good idea. We get it. You missed the funeral, right? You're not so sure he's dead. It's called denial, Jesus, but he's dead. We can vouch for it. And he's been in that tomb for 4 days. And besides, Jesus, you know that nasty disease that Lazarus had? He could still be contagious. So let's just leave that stone alone. Let's go back to the house and have a casserole or a jello pear salad or something." Did everyone that day have the same opinion? Well, you tell me.
"Lazarus is dead. Lazarus is dead. Our dear friend.
But Jesus called out saying, "Take away the stone." He would not be deterred. So against their better judgment, they rolled the stone away. And with a loud voice, Jesus said, "Lazarus, come out." We need to hear from the narrator now, so you tell me. Wouldn't you know it? Out of the tomb hopped Lazarus, looking a lot like King Tut, a mummy wrapped in burial clothes. It was not a pretty sight. Now, I don't know if you've ever tried to walk after lying around dead for 4 days, but it's hard to do. And Lazarus had not just been dead for 4 days. No, he was wrapped up from head to toe. All he could do was hop. And no one was moving to help him. No one stepped up to help Lazarus walk. And Jesus then cried out. He said, "Unbind him and let him go." And how did the crowd respond? Well, you tell me.
"We do not touch dead bodies. He may still be contagious. You touch him, so bind him. That would be outrageous."
But if they did not unbind him, then the miracle would be for nothing. No one can survive long wrapped in grave clothes. That's our story. And it was the last straw. Lazarus was raised. Jesus was as good as dead. The Pharisees set out to kill him now. So why did they put him on that cross? Well, Jesus kept the wrong company. He unbound the powerless. And the world, you know, it likes to keep people bound. You know that, don't you? The powerful like to keep the poor poor. The powerful like to keep the lowly bound up. It's a way of maintaining order. It's a way of protecting their place. The world likes to put people in boxes, to judge people, to label them. Oh, you know the people I'm talking about, don't you? Well, you tell me. The world likes to keep people bound, but Jesus was the great unbinder. He loved all. He saw everyone as a child of God, as his child. Everyone? Everyone. Well, well, well. This behavior could not be tolerated. This unbinding was dangerous to the order. This unbinding had to be stopped, and that is what put Jesus on a cross. It's interesting, is it not, that Jesus could give the woman at the well forgiveness and new life, but the community had to unbind her if she were really to live in freedom. Jesus could give sight to the blind man, but the community had to unbind him, or he would still be on the outside looking in. And miracle of miracles, Jesus could raise the dead. But if Lazarus was left bound in his grave clothes, if the community was unwilling to unbind him, embrace him, and welcome him, then Lazarus was as good as dead. It seems that the miracle over death was easier than changing the minds of the religious folks. It seems that the resurrection of the body is easier than overcoming the prejudices and bigotry and fear that divide us. Here's the truth, my friends. God can perform miracles. God does perform miracles still today. We can't do it. And yet God can't do it without us. We can't raise the dead, and God can't restore the dead to community without us. We need God, and God needs us. God cannot restore the dead to the community without the ministry that's been entrusted to us. And what is that ministry? It's the ministry of unbinding. This is the calling of the church, to be a place where everybody's welcome. This is the calling of the church, a place of unbinding. It matters not where you've been, you are welcome here. It matters not who you love or how many times you've been rejected by those who were supposed to love you. You are welcome here. It does not matter who you voted for, you're welcome here. There are no background checks, there is no litmus test, not here. In this place, everyone is welcome and everyone is equal. And at this table, Jesus makes the guest list, we don't. As servants of the Master, we just set the table and we serve. Who do we serve? Well, we serve every bum and every corpse and every sinner and every leper and every foreigner that Jesus drags in for dinner. Religious folks don't like this. Religious folks kind of think that their good works should provide them with some status. You know, I've done all these good works. I should have some special place at the table, should I not? The religious folks kind of think that all the money that they've given should account for something. At a minimum, it should give them some special access to God. But you know what? It does not work that way. That's not what God's grace is all about. Kind of hard to get your head around it, isn't it? Well, let me end in this way. 2 weeks ago, I taught suicide prevention classes at the South Woodby High School. And at the end of our time together, I encouraged the students to be suicide preventers. How? I encouraged them to listen, to ask questions, to encourage others to seek help, and to be a friend to someone who needed a friend. And at the very least, if you cannot find it in your heart to be a friend to someone, then at least don't be their enemy. Don't put them down. Don't shun them or isolate them because they're gay, or they dress differently, or they worship in a way that you do not understand. Be their friend, and if you cannot be their friend, do not be their enemy. You see, God has given us a sacred calling. We are the followers of the great healer. We are the church, but oftentimes the church has been better at binding than healing. May we be faithful as we help heal the brokenhearted and as we unbind those who have been rejected by a world that loves to keep them bound. That's our story this morning. And that's the gospel of the Lord. Thanks be to God.